the Races with Steve Beck.
A very good Monday, Tuesday, race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebeck.com, happy New Year. It does feel like a Monday. Even after the extended break, how was your holiday season? Why were people so surprised about yesterday? I saw a bunch of people like kind of mystified by by New Year's Day Monday, the Monday holiday. Wasn't that why they passed that years ago? The holiday bill, whatever it was, the Monday holiday. Yeah, I there was never a question that yesterday was going to be a holiday, and it wasn't a ton of there were a handful of racing options. It's been a very good end to the 22 season, and some of the I dotting and T crossing that's going to go on the next by 3 o'clock today, for instance, the filing of Eclipse ballots has to be in. We should talk about that at some point. I'm sure it'll come up a bunch of times this week, undoubtedly. And if I'm not mistaken, I think they'll turn around and get the finalists out pretty quick. I think the finalists are not the issue, for the most part. They're turned out to be. We kept talking about certain categories, it seemed, and we kind of forgot in the discussion leading up. Forgot to talk about what I think is going to turn out to be the toughest, and that was Trainer. The Pletcher Brown debate is going to be really interesting. I mean, the number in terms of raw numbers, they had identical seasons. It was murder, and I talked to several people that were in the same quandary, actually. It was next to impossible to separate them. It'd be very interesting. We'll see what we're not going to know until whatever date in January. I don't have my typical, for whatever reason, Maryland sends out there's a terrific breeding calendar that Maryland sends, but it always shows up like by the 15th of January. And it's the calendar I put, right within eyesight, so that there's a few things on it, most notably the sales calendar. The sales dates are on it, so it's really helpful that way. But it doesn't show up for a couple of weeks, so I've got to look over in other directions, including at our fabulous Kentucky Downs calendar, thanks to Hammer, and I think most people have either received or they're in the process of still receiving, and I think there's a few scragglers that are still getting the Kentucky Downs calendar at yahoo.com out. Hammer, I got to talk to Hammer. Hammer didn't put out I haven't seen the photographs of everybody's sporting event and concert attendance. There's so much, obviously, to dive into here, and it starts at Santa Anita, obviously. We'll have a kind of a little bit of a Santa Anita lilt this morning, because Leonard Powell is going to join us in hour one. Good start for Powell. And Gary Young, how do you not have a chance to you can't have a better start to the year than a Gary Young visit, right? Yeah. So Gary Young in hour two. And we'll talk about Taba with him, obviously, and the Malibu win. The Baffert Auto, a tremendous start at Santa Anita, and obviously opening day, winning the La Brea with the Dream, and had plenty of other, basically won. I think he won every entered five races with multiple horses, and he won all five. Yeah. Well, Country Grammar. I mean, Country Grammar, you knew, was a bit of a, you know, stunkish look. Although I actually picked, I picked somebody else in there. Had a very nice, in fact, they've had a very nice start to the Santa Anita season, including yesterday. They have that policy, the wet weather policy that brings out the, you know, cancellation, and they're going to continue to do that. And if you, in fact, tomorrow I'll have Dick Powell. Maybe I'll have Dick run that by you one more time. You know, Dick has espoused the theory about sealed tracks and their danger, not the day of, but the next day or two, and how they, you know, how they're treated. So Santa Anita is going to continue to be exceedingly cautious, and the people that don't want to understand that, I'm sorry, that's too bad. But off to a very good start, and I did not reach out to Phil D'Amato, who I easily could have, maybe tomorrow, because he won with Ray of Moon from the rail. That was kind of a horse that we all sniffed out, right? And going into opening day, the 26th, Powell, two graded stake wins, two grade twos. San Gabriel with Dicey Moshara, who I did not, that was one, early on that card, that was one whiff. I did not include Dicey Moshara, and that was a mistake. Air Force Red, too, opening to Joe Hernandez for Powell. So among the big starts, Baffert, Powell, D'Amato. Mark Glatt hasn't won a stake, but he told you out in California. He absolutely made it clear that he expected to have a big start with, you know, rank and file, and he did, and he has. So Glatt coming through as well. The Gulfstream conversation to be had, of course. And what limited action in New York, actually, of course, because they didn't get started until last Thursday. Speaking of Thursdays, we got something to look forward to already in terms of this week, because, in fact, maybe tomorrow, maybe we'll get Nick in for an early Wednesday visit, and we'll look at the Thursday $189,000 pick five carryover at Aqueduct. That'll be very attractive and very interesting. So we'll look ahead to that. And the timing is good because, of course, Sam Houston is getting ready to open this week. So we can get Nick in for that as well. That's a good idea to get out in front of that. You know, Laurel had that rescheduled Christmastide steak day. And by the way, speaking of Laurel, it's Callie Francois's birthday. So if you see Callie, you know, out and about on the internet, wish her a happy birthday. Fairgrounds, got a lot to talk about with Brad Cox. Brad Cox will be the first guest of the season. We'll talk to Brad in about 10, 12 minutes, actually. And we got a lot to cover and not a lot of time for him. We're going to get him during the break at Fairgrounds. But Cox, wait, let's see. We got off the air December 23rd, right? Yeah, 23rd. So between the 23rd and Monday or Sunday, Cox won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stakes. I mean, you know, no graded stakes, but the Smarty Jones, the Pago Op, the Sugar Bowl, the Letelier, and the Gunrunner. And some very promising young horses involved in there, including that Jace's Road and Corona Bolt, and then the 1-2 finishers Sunday in the Smarty Jones. Victory Formation, right? And the Taprit, Flavian Pratt came to ride, and the runner-up, Angel of Empire, was the runner-up. But in addition, I want to get an update on Instant Coffee from him. When I, Remington She's All In winner, famed. But it, the two-year-olds in particular, Bases Road, and now three-year-olds. Happy birthday, horses. Forgot to send out. I didn't see a lot of that. Right? Now that I'm thinking about it, on New Year's Day. I didn't see the usual, you know, cascade of happy birthday, horsies. Happy birthday, everybody. Well, the collective birthday of horses. I can't say around the world, of course, because it wasn't the Southern Hemisphere horses. But Brendan Walsh, as well as Cox, very strong start here, or holiday season. It's not the start of the fairground season. Fairgrounds is well underway. There's a couple of people I will probably get to tomorrow. I got a lot of individual. I went today for multiple race winners type conversations and see as many, you know, get as many covered off as possible to get rolling into the season. But there were some very noteworthy individual types that deserve mention, and a couple that actually won in particular that was a nice score. We had a happy American. How great was that with Neil Pass? And I got a couple of emails about people that jumped aboard Happy American. That was great. So Happy American, Jason Barkley, nice. Dave Duggan, how about Duggan? What a nice year. Drafted is now, you know, consistent winner. Won the Gravesend with Rodriguez Castro and Jerry O'Dwyer. That's Sebelius. Gets a graded stake win, right, in the Mr. Prospector. So we got a bunch of people to talk to the next couple of days. I also want to get to Christophe Clement, and Clement with a pair of wins for the holiday at Gulfstream. I mean, the more heralded City Man, who's what a nice horse, wins the Fort Lauderdale. And, you know, the Reeves, Miss J. McCabe, won the Abundantia as well. The Reeves has had, who was it that, was it Dave Grenick, I think? Dave, I think, was doing research for his owner decisions on the Eclipse ballot. And he made the point that the Reeves has had a fabulous year. If you add it up, you know, because there's certain owners that you have to really dig to get the cumulative stats. Gary Barber, and Gary got, he's had a kind of a blasé first half of the year, first two thirds, and then got very hot the last third of the year. And a lot of his, and Gary's got horses spread out. He's got, you know, and then he's got horses that he, you know, has small pieces of, but he had a nice Golden Glider, won the Tropical Park Derby. And he had another win too. Anyway, there's owners like that, and the Reeves, you know, they got horses with Randy Hill. They got horses. They got multiple interesting agglomerations of ownership packages. But they, if I'm getting this right from Grenick, you know, we could call Dave, but we're not supposed to talk to him until at least Gotham. I think he said 21 or 22. They had a hand in. Mike Rapoli too. Rapoli had his hand in, and I'm sure he's going to show up on. I maybe wrongly did not include him. I mean, Godolphin is your owner winner in the Eclipses among the categories, and it's just, you know, it's just overwhelming. But you can, you know, you can get creative with your second and third place votes. Well, I don't know how creative. Peter Brandt has got to be on everybody's ballot, second or third. Second on mine. And then in the third, and you know my, over the years, you've heard my policy on the third place vote can be fun. It can be, you know, somebody that's deserving of a, you know, a salute and, you know, did something very notable. And you know, the first place votes are the only vote that counts toward the decision making. So in fact, some people were asking, you know, they've got a couple of notes on Twitter and such, you know, what's the voting process? And it always has to be reiterated and re-explained every year So, anyway, I digress, which not unusual. How about a couple of, before we reach for Brad Cox, and let me tell you who else is going to be involved. Well, MIG, it's not MIG Monday, but we're off 24 hours. I think Andy, we'll talk to Andy tomorrow. But MIG will join us in hour two. I mentioned Gary Young. So Brad Cox, Leonard Powell, MIG, Young. Oh, finally going to get a chance to talk to Lynn Cash. I reached out to Lynn like three times during 2022. And maybe it's one of those happen for a reason type things. You know, traditionally, we'd love to have that visit every year with connections of the winningest horse. And there was never going to be a question. Some years, you know, you get to the last couple of weeks in December, and, you know, there's 7, 8 wins, 9 wins, 10 wins. There was never a question that Beverly Park wasn't going to be the winningest horse of 2022. And as if he hadn't done enough, as we like to say at Derby Trail, he's done enough. He started 30 times, 15 wins, including the other day, to close out the year. Just unbelievable. A $12,000 claim, 12.5. And he's not old. I mean, he's six, but just amazing. Came into 2022 in actually an interesting fashion. And in fact, as much as everybody's talking about the season, 15 wins and 30 starts, 6 seconds, 3/3. So hit the board 24 out of 30 starts. You got to actually tick back a little bit to the claim. And his campaign in 21, because he's won 21 of his last 37 starts. And it's notable, obviously, for all kinds of reasons, mostly because he's done it, you know, at this variety of venues, Fairgrounds, Mahoning, Charlestown, Keeneland, slipped one into Timonium. So great. He went to Timonium, Churchill, Thistledown. It's phenomenal. And Laurel as well. And did I miss any? Belterra. So he's won this huge following, and it's going to continue. Where, I mean, he's going to keep running. You're not going to. I mean, it's one of those horses that you don't have to train. You just race him instead, and it's just very cool. So Lynn Cash, who had a spectacular year, if you weren't following it closely, I mean, Lynn got his first graded stake win. He's showing up, you know, all over the place in New York and you name it. So we're going to get a chance to talk to Lynn Cash in hour three, and kind of an annual visit, very typically on opening day of the broadcast season. Erin Hallowell, Thoroughbred Charities of America, and because you know it's coming, right? You, it's the TCA auction, and it starts later this week. Stallion season highlighted by a flight line season, which is going to guarantee a certain amount just in the coffer immediately. But as we talked to Erin November, I think in November actually, and we sort of hinted about the TCA auction. So Erin's going to join us, and we'll go through all the details. And of course, not only is there the online auction, then there's the live auction at the big gala, which is what, Tuesday, Monday or Tuesday next week, Monday or Tuesday. And there's the sale too, right? We got the January sale. There's no, You know, somebody said to me when I said I was on vacation this week, last week, and they said, "Oh, does the racing stop?" Racing does not stop. Racing goes, and racing just doesn't ever let up. So, yeah. I mean, Christmas, we were all right. We got Christmas off, and there were a couple of very quiet days where you really, in fact, Sid Fernando, we'll talk to Sid tomorrow. I had a very funny conversation with Sid that he said, "What's been happening?" I said, "I don't know." I said, "I'm on vacation." He said, "Me neither." He said, "Me too." He said, "I haven't read anything." So we were in the same. We were kind of in the same frame of mind, so to speak, that it was going to be a very quiet holiday season. There's no quiet season for the Brad Cox Barn, though. Brad, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Steve.
And how was the holiday, real quick? Get that the bomb mots
Yeah, it
out of
was
the way.
great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great. We spent Christmas in New Orleans and obviously New Year's Day in Hot Springs.
Well, that and. Who could ask for anything more?
Good start.
Exactly. Well, speaking of good starts, talk about what's been going on in the barn. And I looked up and I realized I got to get Brad Cox to start the year because from the time we got off for the Christmas break, the seasonal break, you won no less than five stakes. And even before that, I was at Remington. You weren't for famed for She All In, but the action, particularly at Fairgrounds, with Jace's Road and Dazzling Blue, Corona Bolt, and Amore, and then you mentioned being at Oaklawn, and here's the Smarty Jones win. Let's work our way backwards. Victory Formation and Angel of Empire, and they both ran.
Yeah, big races from both. I'm very happy. Victory Formation stepped up and showed that he could compete around two turns. Pedigree suggested he would. And obviously, Angel of Empire finished up well, galloped out great. And, you know, I think obviously the further the better, I think really for both of them. So looking forward to what the spring, how they develop throughout the winter and the spring.
Do you just stay on the Oaklawn path, the Oaklawn 3-year-old path from here?
But no, I mean, I don't know. We just kind of look between here and the fairgrounds probably would be the best way to approach it. You know, I think we need to continue to give them time to develop their young horses. Both colts, I would say, would not show back up in the Southwest. It's back a little quick in 4 weeks. So we'll give them time to recover from this run and, you know, maybe look at possibly the Risen Star at the fairgrounds or back here in the Rebel at the end of February.
What was interesting and important about this race was, you know, Angel of Empire broke the maiden at Indy going a mile and came back at the closing week and won again at a mile. So that you knew what you had there, at least in terms of the distance. But for Victory Formation, it was important to stretch out and talk about the satisfaction on that front.
Yeah, no, but no doubt. The Angel of Empire is a PA bred, so it kind of kept me running in Kentucky, with the exception of that race at Kentucky Downs, where he was eligible for that was a Keeneland graduation race. But no, in regards to Victory Formation, you know, I mean, he was a colt that we thought would go long. He showed a lot, obviously, first time out, then a second race. Thought we'd give him one more run around one turn, and he really showed a lot of speed that day, a lot more than I expected.
Yeah.
And then he really fought on well and showed us some heart and determination and a tremendous amount for a young horse. So, you know, he seems like to be a very, very honest horse. He's good mind, didn't overdo it, good workhorse. And, you know, I think he's got a big future.
Victory Formation, he's a Tapperit out of a Smart Strike mare, bred by Gainsway. He was a $340,000 purchase and is partnered up, Frank Fletcher and Spendthrift. Wearing Frank's colors the other day, Flavian Pratt came ride, and that was notable in itself.
Yeah, we had just a couple weeks before the race. Louis had rode this horse the two previous starts, and he'd obviously made the comment, Louis Saez, that is, had made the comment, you know, this should stretch. And, you know, I like hearing that. And obviously, we're going to do it and give him the opportunity. And Louis was had some commitments there at Gulfstream that he felt like he needed to be there for. So reached out to Flavian, and he took the call a couple weeks before the race, and it worked out.
Excellent. All right, let's turn our attention then, and I should mention before I do that, Angel of Empire. I don't want to leave the Albaz out of the picture. A classic Empire that was a very reasonable $70,000 Keeneland purchase. Got kind of ignored in the betting, too. It was 18-1, and kind of a nice way to approach that race. Victory Formation on the front end, and Angel of Empire making steady progress with Joe Talamo behind.
Yeah, it was a good setup.
Absolutely. All right, let's talk about what went on in NOLA. And it's hard to say who was the most exciting. I mean, Corona Bolt, let's start with the sprinter and the Sugar Bowl win.
Yeah, he ran big. Another horse that we're, you know, hopeful of stretch. He'll get his opportunity. Looking at the Southwest with him. Nice colt that, you know, once again, showed a good bit of speed. But, you know, was able to relax and ass too. And, you know, hopeful that he'll take that next step.
Corona Bolt wins the Sugar Bowl. And let's go to the Gun Runner winner, too, Jace's Road. Those were the two that particularly, you know, had people, seemed to have people most excited. And I'm sure the barn excited.
Yeah, this is a nice colt. You know, he showed a lot in his first run. I thought his second race there in the Iroquois, he ran well. He ran against some good horses. And he ran on. He was coming at the end. And then in the street sense, he was training so well leading up. And for whatever reason that day, he just wasn't himself. You could tell him, I could tell in the paddock, he just was a little flustered. And obviously behind the gate, the jock came off and a little reluctant to load. So, and it was muddy. So it just wasn't his day. I was intending on running the lounge race, but just it wasn't going to go. And the Gun Runner, he looked like he fit. And he was training well there at the fairground, so we gave him a shot, and it worked out well.
He's Stone Street and was bred by Summerfield. Florent Giroux signed on, and this was also, by the way, I just realized too, I hadn't even noticed Distorted Pro was second in here for you.
Yeah, he's a nice little horse that's stepped up and he ran a big race to be second. So as a first level allowance, probably keep him around one turn for the time being. But he's a little horse that we hope develops as the year goes on.
Then let's back up to Jace's Road and the Gun Runner win.
No, he like I said, he's a nice colt that, you know, showed us a lot early on and just had the setback there with the just wasn't his day there in the street.
Right,
and
there you go.
He rebounded well.
All right, and who am I missing? Amore wins the Pago High, Dazzling Blue, the Letelier.
Yeah, Amore, nice filly that we picked up out of the November sale. Has done everything right. I was actually kind of happy the race came off. I was going to run her either way because she needed to run. But I think she's a nice filly. I'm hoping she stays in the training for 2023, and hopefully we can win a graded stake with her. Seems like a really nice sound filly that's honest, good workhorse, and like what we've seen from her so far. Dazzling Blue is doing really well. She's 2-for-2 enough to get two runs around one turn, hoping to stretch her out into mischief out of a Kerwin mare. And I think she's you know, very talented filly. A nice filly, nice pedigree, and hopefully we can make her a great stake winner here in the near future.
This was, as you mentioned, the Into Mischief out of Blue Violet and the Nyland filly mare now. And Windstar bred this horse, Judmont owns, and this was part of that, kind of gratifying re-up by Judmont. I remember talking to Garrett O'Rourke about, you know, Judmont investing in young horses and fillies in particular, which is encouraging in the wake of Khalid's pass. Let me ask you about Instant Coffee and get an update there before I ask you about a couple of maiden breakers.
Yeah, no, he's doing well. He's got a few more works. I'm appointing him for the LeConf there at the fairgrounds, about a mile on the 16th. Will be his first run since the Jockey Club. But he's doing really well. Looks great, moving well, and excited to get his campaign rolling the third week of January.
Outstanding. And I mentioned just that there was a hatful of maiden winners, and among the ones at Turfway, actually. And I did want to ask one question. You had Wadsworth and More Than Work, both on New Year's Eve. Capella broke the maiden on the 29th, Botanical on the 30th. How are you breaking up because there's three different purse levels, 50,000, 70,000, and 90,000 between Oaklawn, Turfway, and Fairgrounds, not to mention New York. How are you breaking up these lightly raced types, the now three-year-olds?
It just really depends on what we think a horse may want. Obviously, synthetic, synthetic there, Turfway, and it also depends to the clients, the region they like racing in. It kind of all falls into place, but it can be challenging at times. But for the most part, it all kind of falls into place.
Who among those maiden winners? There was also Caucab and Eyeing Clover.
Nice horse for construction. Yeah, now he showed a good bit of speed first time out. I think with the pedigree spread to stretch, he is out of a forced walk at mare, but he's a nice horse. And Wadsworth, listen, I mean, he's a horse that we've caught a lot of. We packed him to Saratoga, he just didn't show up. It's taking a while. It looked like the castration may have helped him a good bit. And he obviously took the synthetic. So, I'm excited about him. Call Cab's a nice colt. We have him back in. He broke his maiden. He's back up for two life allowance this coming weekend. And hopefully he's, the next race toward, hopefully bigger and better things as the year goes on.
Brad, we didn't talk after the November action at Churchill and give everybody an update on West Willpower and Folsom.
They're doing well. Both are hopefully getting ready to start back Great State Company here in the near future. Could be the Louisiana or the Razorback in February. So they're both doing well. They bounced out of the Clark in good order. See where they take us.
About a quick hit. You got Donegal Arrow coming up on Thursday. You've got Willa Kenzie as well Thursday at Fairgrounds. You got Coach coming back in the Pippin.
Yeah, Coach doing well. Hopefully she'll repeat the Pippin. Happy with how she looks physically. Willa Kenzie, nice colt, war front. That's now mile and an eighth, first time at the Fairgrounds. This horse has been ready to run for a while. Obviously, we've had some issues there with the turf course, but looking forward to getting him started. And Donegal Arrow, good call. I think we're starting him out at a mile, which is probably what he wants, is two turns. Acts as though he's got enough speed to be, involved early. So I think he's a horse that could be effective first time out, but he's doing well, and we'll see how it goes.
Well, and some final thoughts as well about 2022. A very solid season, and doesn't appear to be an Eclipse Award winning year this year. But that kind of thing. You can't pencil yourself in every year. But you're gonna have some horses that show up, I think, as finalists. Certainly Cyberknife. He's on my ballot, Caravelle, on the sprinter ballot, I think. Some thoughts about last year.
No, great year. I mean, in regards to earnings, it was the second most, the second highest earning year we've had. Overall, big year. It was a year where I felt like we were second in a lot of great ones. Fortunately, we went, I believe, five. But I think there was like 9 or 10 seconds in grade ones that were like, Warrant, Loggins, and Chop Chop, and there's several of them. But listen, it was a great year. Very happy with the year, and hopefully we can build off of it, and some of those seconds turn into wins and grade ones. But overall, a great barn, great staff, great owners, and looking to build off with 2022.
You know, I do want to ask about one horse that surprised me that I'd completely forgotten about, Brad, and I'm glad I just thought of her. Matarea, who I ended up including on the sprinter in the sprinter category. She got a vote from me, not for first, but that went to Goodnight Island.
Yeah.
But I included her, and she, I think she's been really forgotten about.
Yeah, I think it's probably just the timing. After the test, we gave her a break. No surgeries or anything needed. Just seemed like she had been, you know, running, you know, through a 2-year-old season and straight into a 3-year-old season. She didn't get a break, and she was just asking for a break. She got it. I was happy with the way she came out of the race, but there wasn't a whole lot of options out there, and we thought we'd give her the time. She's, I believe she's ready to join us in the middle of this month. So excited about getting her back going, and hopefully she's one that can add to, you know, add another great one to her resume this year.
Well, and speaking of forgotten, I'm going to throw another horse at you, a Derby starter that I think people have forgotten about, Tawny Port. What's up with Tawny Port?
He's doing great. We gave him a break after the PA Derby. He's back on the work tab there at the fairgrounds, and hopefully be ready to run in a month or so.
There you go. Well, you've already given me a good 5 more minutes than expected. Brad, congratulations on a tremendous finish to 22, good start to 23, and we will see you soon, and I fully expect to talk soon.
Sounds good, Steve. Talk to you soon. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Brad Cox, everybody, and there you go. You got, I assume you got, you know, a notebook full, right? A notebook full. I was writing stuff down as fast as I can. Sometimes I'm better at it than others. Corona Bolt to the Southwest. That's the biggest, that's the one thing I think I officially, yeah. Sometimes I write it on the chart. Sometimes I write it on the pad. I mean, it's pretty amazing to have the kind of year he had. And you know, it's going to be Chad or Todd Pletcher, you know, back to another eclipse. So thanks to Brad. That was a good way to kind of pull in. Oh, let's see. What? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 wins. 7 stakes and 5 maidens. That doesn't even include the runner-up types. All right, so we got a little pause here. We got about 10 minutes before I got to bring in Leonard Powell, and I suppose that's a good spot for a couple of reflections from the end of the year, right? And the start of the new year. I had a lovely Christmas, and had the kids here, and the babies. I got to admit, yeah, the grandchildren make Christmas, you know, just special because, you know, they're starting to get Lennon, certainly, although she was a little under the weather. She's been sick for a while, and she's just getting over it. So she was a little more cranky than you typically see from her. Usually she's just constantly, you know, chipper and sweet and fun. But she was a little cranky. There were a couple of crying jags and a lot of no's. No! No! That kind of thing. But she didn't even want to open her. She didn't open her presents. That was the crazy thing. She didn't open them until the next. They got here on the 26th. They got here on Christmas Boxing Day. And she didn't want to open her presents. Everybody sat, you know, Spencer, and Zach, Tina's, our boys. She refused. And so Tina sat her down, I think on Tuesday. And she, it was funny. Then by the time she finished opening them, she was like, more present? No, no, Lennon, that's it. Just those 11 or however many she got. She got a cocoa melon, which is like a children's karaoke toy that absolutely that scored, that registered in a big way. So it was nice. I cooking. I think I did put up some cooking photos. At least, well, I think maybe just the Christmas dinner. And I wasn't kidding about that, by the way. I'm never going to say that, you know, Christmas dinner or Easter dinner or you know, Passover, you know, any Rosh Hashanah, that any big dinner is not going to be better than Thanksgiving. I mean, Thanksgiving's always going to be the, yeah, it's the centerpiece. It's the sun in the seasonal holiday dining galaxy, in the solar system. So, but Tina made that mac and cheese, by the way. I should give her full credit. She makes that mac and cheese that, forget it. It was just unbelievable, actually. But I did a ham, and I think I said I was going to do the root beer glaze. That was a home run. The root beer glaze. And then a gravy, the root beer gravy. You don't think of ham having, you know more about ham gravy than me, but the drippings, the ham drippings, with the glaze made for a hell of a sauce. Yeah, made a hot ham sandwich. I think first time I've ever had that. I took a bunch of slices of the ham, and that's probably the seventh or eighth ham in the course of Easter and Christmas dinners. Maybe, yeah, seven or eight. That was the first time every single slice came off that ham bone. In fact, I was shocked the next morning when I went to make some eggs and do some things. I made a quiche, too, with the ham and smoked Gouda. And I was shocked how little ham was left. It was like an 11-pound ham. And they rifled it. So ham is gaining momentum in this household. So we had a lot of fun. And what else? I did a lot of seafood for New Year's week. I made Blue's crab cakes. In fact, I'm sure Blue's listening. Happy New Year, Blue. We should get Blue on and let him provide his New Year's blessings, which I'm sure will make everybody smile. So, well, you know what? I'll make a note. Let me get Blue in here this week. Good thought. That's a good thought. It actually occurred to me when I made them. I made them for, I'm losing track of days, that it's only the third. So it would have been New Year's Day. I made the crab cakes and made the, oh, I got Tina 50 clams, 50 little necks for New Year's Eve. And she told me this morning when she left for school, do not go to the store. Do not bring anything in this house. I should put up another couple pictures. I got so many. I've tried to do this the last few years, but I mean, there's so many pictures. It's ridiculous. So I go through the favorites page and put those up in a gallery. But I should do more because the Route 66 trip, I haven't even fully documented properly. So I tried to, you know, between the racetrack visits and and Route 66 and everything else that goes on, I tried to do a rotogravure on Facebook. I think there's 36 pictures, but there I got so many more I could feature. So I hope everybody had equally as pleasurable a Christmas and tail end of Hanukkah. Hanukkah ended on Christmas Day, right? Yeah, it ended on the Sunday. Yeah. We saw some. I maybe tomorrow with Andy, I'll catch up on a couple of movies and things. Saw The Fablemans over the weekend, which was really good, really enjoyed. And what else? Yeah, if you haven't seen The Fablemans, you know, the Spielberg biopic that he made. We should all have lives and careers that you can do your own you know, biographical film. That's, yeah, it's nice, nice work if you can get it. But that closing scene is unbelievable when he meets John Ford. Is that a spoiler? I didn't want to. I shouldn't do that. Anyway, so we had a wonderful, wonderful holiday, and punctuated by some good horseplay. And as I mentioned, I going into the break had not had had a lousy second half of the year, and so finishing with a good day at opening day at Santa Anita, and they had it. I can't wait to talk to Hammer. He was there, outstanding. In fact, they were a little overwhelmed. They had 35,000 to 40. They think 35,000 to 40,000 on opening day, and I mean, far exceeded what they thought they were going to have a good day based on reservations. Yeah, that's all you can do. You can base it on, you know, dining reservations, and that's about, you know, that's the barometer. But just a huge day to kick off the meet. And so we'll look forward to talking to Hammer about that. And then Hammer ran up to what? Yosemite? Did he go to Yosemite? Jellystone? Jellystone Park? Hey, boo-boo! I'm not sure where. It's the first guffaw of the year. Courtesy of Yogi Bear and boo-boo. A couple of news pieces. We got a couple of, about 5 minutes before I reach out for Leonard Powell. A couple of news items. Tomorrow I'll probably get reach for Shug, who won the Suwannee River with Stolen Holiday. But as much as we, you know, look forward to any visit from Shug, we also have to deal with the colic death of Code of Honor. Yeah. It's sad. So I'll save that a little bit that tomorrow. And it's a different kind of passing. But Trackus, Barry Weisbord pulling the plug on Trackus. And, you know, essentially, it was an important development. Trackus, what Trackus brought to the data era, let's call it, around racing, was vitally important. And, you know, the mantle for, you know, the digital tracking of horses has fallen to essentially to Equibase and to Jockey Club Information Systems, as, you know, the GMAX, and they've got the hybrid. You know, they've come a long way in terms of working out the kinks in that system, and you know, now they've got the hybrid. They're utilizing the beams, and they're utilizing the satellite positioning. But Trackus got that, you know, this era initiated, and deserves, Barry deserves, he's been so innovative in so many different ways, and you know, has invested time and energy and money into the game for decades, and deserves a tremendous amount of credit. I mean, to be very direct about what, you know, what the beginning of the end for Track was when Pat Cummings left. Trackus essentially, you know, was kind of, you know, the identity that had been cultivated and put out into, you know, out into the player community, and not just the players. I mean, it was, you know, it was being utilized in all different manners by the tracks, and, you know, with, you know, website sections. When Pat left, I got to tell you, I don't think we had a single conversation subsequently with anybody. There wasn't a point person. I mean, Barry Weisbord certainly, but he wasn't out front with the public the way Pat was. So that Pat was very key. We got also this week note that Dale Capuano officially retired, as did Rick Schosberg. And of course, Rich's, you know, his retirement was, he was out ahead of that a little bit. And Dale, I guess we knew about Dale about the same time, maybe in the fall. Yeah. So we've got to pay tribute to his terrific career. So just a few of the headlines the other day, other last few days. There's also a couple of interesting little notes, including the arrival on these shores of Grace McEntee, the British jock. She's going to ride at Turfway. Dettori, haven't even met, how could I go an hour, give or take, and not mention Frankie Dettori and his nice start, right? Yeah, Dettori got off to a good start, including the win on Country Grammar and more. There were a few big multiple win-type occasions. I should mention McPeak the other day at Oaklawn. How about that antic? He won both of the stakes and two maiden races, right? Four, I think he won four races, and he might have been second, I think, even. I mean, it's tough to keep track. I mean, watched too much racing. Tina was getting annoyed, you know. Yesterday, she was like, "Haven't you had? I thought you were on vacation." I must have heard that six times over the last I don't know. What's it been? 10 days. Yeah, that's about right. I probably looked at races and handicapped, and I wrote up at least four cards or five cards. So yeah, I guess that's about right. I thought you were on vacation. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to look at a sequence, I'm going to write it up and share the opinion. So that's mine. I'm sorry. What can I say? I'm surprised that she would, you would think she knows me well enough at this point. Leonard Powell is going to join us. He's gotten off to a great start at this meet, including the San Gabriel win with Dicey Moshara, and then the Joe Hernandez days later, winning the Joe, yeah, the Air Force Red, winning the Joe Hernandez. Leo, congratulations. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
What a good start. You got to be delighted.
Yeah. It was a good end of 2022 and a good start of 2023.
Very much. And let's start with Dicey, because I personally blew it. I don't know why I discounted her chances.
Yeah, no, he's a nice horse. You know, he's always been there, always been consistent. He's a horse. He's very tricky to ride. You know, if you look back at his replays, you know, if he's too far back, he loses interest in his races, and he runs like he's going 3 miles at Cheltenham, and he never gets involved. But he's a horse that you have to keep involved in the race, and cannot be further than mid pack, and then he always has something for the end.
And what was interesting about this, it when you looked at that group that included Master of Foxhounds, that I think, you know, most of us expected to get to the lead, there was potentially some pace pressure. Prince Obama, D'Amato's horse, could have gone forward as well. It's not as if Dicey got a big setup in terms of the speed in front. It was an even pace.
Yeah, the first fraction was slow, and then Mike kind of, you know, kicked on a bit with Master Foxhounds at the three quarters, and that kind of helped us a little bit. But yeah, no, I mean, it wasn't favored to close us.
Well, and you know, ending the year with this win, and I gotta go back here and look, because I don't know, was this his first stake win?
Yes, yeah. He had been great at placed. You know, we went through the conditions with him. He won his maiden, his first condition, second condition, and then he's been knocking on the door in those races. You know, always running his race. We are getting much luck in trip, and the opening day here at Santa Anita was his day.
Well, Juan Hernandez got aboard, and got aboard for the first time, and that's interesting, you know, with you saying that he's a tricky horse to ride. Does Juan get on him in the morning?
No, actually, he never got on him
wow.
in the morning. but he does very good homework, Juan. You know, he watches videos, and he's raced against him, so he knows him. And you know, it was very much a matter of Juan's agent, you know, kind of, you know, asking me about riding him for a few times. And, you know, after the Hollywood Turf Cup, I was a bit disappointed by his race that day, because I thought that could have been his day, you know, the setup should have been better for him. And so we decided to make a change in riders, and Craig was there at the right time, and we gave him the call.
Very nice. Well, there's a couple of things, too, I should ask before we move on and talk about some of the other successes. From a distance standpoint, his second or third win at a mile and an eighth, and he also ran very well at Golden Gate in the mile on the Tapita. Do you feel like the mile to a mile and an eighth, something you'll concentrate on more going forward?
No, I wouldn't mind going back to mile and a quarter. He's run some really good races. And I mean, it's funny you mentioned the race on the Tapita at Golden Gate, because when you look at speech figures like magazines, that was his best number ever. He ran a 7 on the ride that day. But, and which shows that, you know, running a 7 and not winning it, that means, you know, he had quite an unlucky trip that day. But, he's a horse, he switches off very easily in the race. So this is why, you know, distance could be a big asset for him, because once he switches off, he always saves energy for the end.
Dicey Moshera gets the meet off to a great start, winning the San Gabriel. Let's turn our attention to the other win, the Joe Hernandez, and Air Force Red, also Hernandez.
Yeah. Actually, you know, it was very much a matter of, you know, JJ being at the top of the tree during the summer here, and making all the right moves. And we've been quite lucky together on my two other fillies, Neige Blanche and Avenue de France.
Sure.
He won stakes in both of them, so it's, you know, trying to keep the luck going.
Talk a little. I got to pull the chart here. Give me one second, and because I mean, I got stuff stacked to the ceiling here. So much racing. There we go. Franco, come on. I'm not finding it. All right, tell me. tell me about the background on this horse.
So he's a horse that he came to my barn. Owned by John and Holly Golightly, and they are a small operation based at Galway Downs. And the horse came late in his career. You know, he came in the middle of the year as a 3-year-old. And so he only made his first race as a 4-year-old. And he broke his maiden on his second start. And then Eclipse Thoroughbreds approached us to get involved, which we were very happy to do so. So now they are partners on the horse. And he's just kept raising the ladder, you know. He won the first condition, the second condition. And then we tried him at 5 furlongs on the turf at Del Mar. But that was a little too fast for him that day. And plus, you know, he got bumped around quite a bit in that race. And then we stretched him to a mile in the Del Mar Mile, and Johnny V rode him that day and didn't really know him. And we ended up chasing a speed that was a bit too fast. And the thing, if you watch that replay, the thing that was very impressive, I mean, the horse goes, I don't know if it's 44 or 45 for the half, catches a breather, and then re-breaks and still hangs on for fourth that day. And it was a fast race. Then we ran him in Santa Anita in the Lure, and he won wire to wire in a good style. And then we came back down the hill on December 31st, and he did the same, you know, broke on top and started pointing his ears forwards and just kept on going.
Well, and a couple of things, because, you know, front runners down the hill, and it's not like he was dogging it either. I mean, this was a fast, particularly the middle part of the race. The pace was,
yeah, no,
was there.
He went 21 and changed the first quarter, so he didn't steal it.
No, not at all, and finished well, and in fact felt like he was expanding the lead at the end.
Yes, yeah.
Well, and he's the perfect, actually, you know, he's the perfect, he's got the right makeup. You know, Rick Hammerly taught me years ago when I didn't know how to approach wagering the hill races, and Hammer told me you want a miler, you want a horse that, you know, is typically a turf miler cutting back down the hill, and that changed my whole outlook on the hill course.
Yeah, no, definitely. But usually, you know, turf milers, they do good down the hill because they be closers. You know, usually they go a bit too fast in front, and then the speed will kind of stop once you hit the flat, and then milers can come and close. But him, you know, he's pretty versatile. He can be on the lead like that.
Well, the meat is not even, you know, not even 10 days old, and you got two graded stake wins. And, you know, we mentioned what a terrific season you had. And for you, by far your best year in North America.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's all a matter of, you know, the stock we have at the barn, you know, and owners are putting nice horses into our hands. And we're grateful that we can reward them.
You know, we should mention, because we did a I hope was an appropriate tribute to Jeb Cohen, and you know, you're another of the trainers that handle horses for Red Baron's barn, Rancho Temescal. Some thoughts about Mr. Cohen.
Oh, I mean, Jed was a wonderful man to work with, and always positive. He was really giving, you know, by putting the trust in us, he was giving us confidence to do things, you know, and we just wanted to do good for him because first he deserved it and he trusted us, and those are the best owners, you know, owners that trust you. Yeah. And, you know, I always say, you know, owner and trainer is just like a husband and wife relationship. Trust between each other is paramount because once that trust is broken, it's never the same.
Well put. You know, for you too. I mean, you know, Mark Glatt reflects this, and Jeff Mullins. You know, getting horses from him. You know, you had a real, you know, you had a partner. You know, for an extended period, he wasn't somebody that, you know, that jumped around with horses. If he saw something in you as a horseman, and you know, and sent you horses, you had yourself a client that you could count on.
Yes, yeah, no, definitely. That was definitely the case with Jed and Timmy's son.
Let me also ask about yesterday, because Freedom Flyer, third in the Las Cienegas, and Rebel Girl, we should note, with that maiden breaker yesterday.
Yeah, no, both ran very good races. You know, Freedom Flyer got, you know, she broke really sharp, and she ended up being right there, and maybe that cost us at the end for second place, but the winner was much the best yesterday. But overall, you know, achieving a graded stakes placing with a daughter of Constitution, it's great for a resume, and then hopefully this year we can find an overnight stakes that she can win and become a black type winner.
And
Rebel Girl ran a very good race, being chased by two perfect trainees on both sides, and she proved to be a Rebel Girl.
You know, and that race, as it happens, I hit the pick five there yesterday, and this group looked really competitive. And I don't know how much betting you ever do, Leonard, but I used six horses in here, and I had a real concern that I was going to beat by the other horse of Baffert's, looks like money, the 12-1 shot. But when I looked up, you know, it became clear Rebel Girl was going to win in the late, you know, in the late stages. I couldn't believe that she was 11-1. that was a key to yesterday's action.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think, you know, she was maybe a little forgotten because last time she got beat by six or seven lengths. But when you look back, you know, the winner that beat her last time came right back and won the first condition allowance. So the form was light.
That was Phenom that did that. And, you know, there was a very funny somebody. I don't think you do much. You do a little bit on. You're on Twitter. You've got
yes.
Chevaux Rapid.
Actually, that's not my handle. The handle is Leo Power Racing.
Leo Power. There you go. Okay. Somebody asked yesterday on Twitter. It made me laugh. They said, is this Rebel Girl? I see DeSaru listed as one of the owners. And they said, is that Laura DeSaru? And Marcia Nafee answered. And I was going to follow up and say, I see Nafee listed. Is that Marcia Nafee? Because, you know, anybody that follows racing in California should know Laura DeSaru and Marcia Nafee.
Yeah, no, and it's very rewarding to be able to train for people that have trained before, you know, because,
sure.
You know, they know how it is. And that's very, very... I'm very grateful that Laura has put her faith into us.
Well, and Rebel Girl had four tries. This was a noble mission. You know, it's interesting. Mr. Farish was a co-breeder with Pamela Deegan, and they paid for, you know, for this filly, $285,000 as an OBS April purchase.
Yeah, no, it's Emmanuel, which is Laura's husband.
Sure.
Border at the sale, and she had done a very good breeze show that day, and then we had to give her a bit of time after the sale, which is, you know, it happens quite often after these three old sales. Then she had run 2 good seconds, and every time, you know, she at a mile 16, I thought, you know, she's not finishing quite as well. And last time we did shorten her back to 6.5 furlongs, and she ran a very good second. And the distance yesterday was supposed to be 6.5, but they put it back to 5.5 because the chute was a bit too soft, the turf. But Johnny V did a great job, you know, putting her into the race, giving her a breather, and making one run.
I haven't seen if the fig has come back, but you know, I'm glad you mentioned the, you know, they made some last minute adjustments. You know, they got plenty of rain on Sunday, and they shortened up, you know, a couple of distances. They actually also moved. There was going to be the one race going 6.5 on the main course. They moved that to the hill, which was surprising.
Yeah, no, it's because the chute is newer, so I think the roots don't go as deep, and it doesn't probably drain as good as the old course.
Well, Leo, you're off to a tremendous start. I didn't ask you about Avenue de France, but let's look ahead to what you got coming, including a couple of maiden claimers that were entered. Looking ahead to, gotta be when? Is that Saturday? That's Friday.
Friday.
Yep.
So Avenue de France, she's going to the sale. She's 5 turning 6. So she's going to the sale next week at Kinland. I mean, she's a grade 2 winner, so she's got quite some residual value for the partners. And then on Friday, we have Circle the Moon that's debuting in a maiden special weight. He's by Malibu Moon. I think, you know, the further the better. I run him in there because that's a new race that Santa Anita's created. It's a maiden optional claiming. So you can be ever for the claiming price, or if you've sold for 150 or less in an auction, then you can be entered without being in for a tag. So that's what he's in for. And then, you know, we have two in the maiden 20s, Batucane and College Boy. I mean, they should be competitive there, but I mean, they're not world beaters.
Yeah, fair enough. Circle the Moon is interesting, and this is a Cohen runner that came out of has actually been through the ring a bunch of times. Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
right. That horse came out of a mixed sale as a weanling, then a yearling sale, and then a two-year-old sale.
Yeah, no, he's been there quite a few, but he's a very straightforward horse, and he should run a good race, you know. Yeah, but I mean, down the line, he's more going to be scored.
Well, Leo, I'm delighted to get you on. What a great way to start the meet and coming off your best year yet. Continued success, and look forward to talking to you again soon. You got a barn full of nice horses. Delighted for you.
Thank you so much, and happy New Year again.
I appreciate it. Bon année. There we go.
Bon année.
That's it. Leo Powell, everybody, and very strong beginning to the year. Yeah, that Rebel, that for those of you that bet along yesterday, and what we did have to rely on the backup ticket that hit yesterday, the pick five, and that I looked up. I had not really, you know, paid attention to where the prices had gone, and when I saw that that she was 11-1, I thought, well, if this goes well the rest of the way, that's going to be, you know, a key if this thing is going to bring back, because it did get a little chalky from that point on. You had that, I tell you who looks like a hell of a nice horse going forward is the D'Amato. We'll maybe talk to Phil tomorrow. Motorious. I tried to, just in case, I kind of spread a little bit in that eighth race. That was the hill course, and it didn't really need to. Motorious and top two, I mean, going in, I thought were Coulthard and the other D'Amato and this Motorious, and then folded in some of the workout report information, and Motorious was really lauded coming into this. This is owner Anthony Fantacola, and Muhar, 5-year-old. This looks like his fourth start in North America, and has now got back-to-back wins coming off the Del Mar allowance. I imagine that D'Amato will send him into Stakes Company next. And also, speaking of an import that's on the go, Maglev as well for the Coens. This one for Glatt. That Maglev, third start in North America as well. Galileo Gold Colt. Ran well as the, was second choice? Third choice. And then you had, there was a short-priced claimer, too, that ran, Established. Established, just held on. Next Revolt was running at him. And Mr. Fisk, the Arrogate, that was an interesting maiden race that night. That was an interesting placement in the sequence, too. Mr. Fisk wins by about 3/4 over the other Baffert, that Harlow Cap, who Mr. Fisk, and I tell you, I did not have Harlow Cap, so I needed Mr. Fisk to catch him, and he did. And then came the Nightcap, where Tio Magico was looking to, seems like a horse that was developing, and I was not crazy about the way Gonzalez approach that race, but we did have Exalted on the backup ticket, so it worked out okay. He was very tentative and left Tio Magico with too much to do. Way too much. Ended up, I think, fourth. But anyway, it was fun yesterday. I enjoyed the last day of the vacation and, you know, wanted to play. All right, let's take a break. First of the season, and we come back. Got Mig swinging in, and we do have to discuss the difficult situation. I could not. I'm sure, like many of you, if you were watching the football game yesterday, the game on paper, you know, was going to be important and exciting, and instead it turned into as harrowing and as upsetting and frightening a injury as you could imagine. And I thought that, I mean, I hate that I got to bring this up with Mig to start things out, but the concern and the reaction to DeMar Hamlin, you know, essentially with was a heart stoppage, a concussion injury, and what was amazing was it just didn't look, it looked, you know, like a standard, you know, tackle, you know, aftermath. It that's what was, I mean, I just, you know, they looked up and you could see the urgency of what was going on. But what occurred to me as the assorted coverage conversations that had to react to it, and they didn't have information, they didn't know, you know, the status of Hamlin as he was transported to UC Medical Center. I just thought to myself, you know, how rare, I mean, this kind of a, you know, potentially fatal injury and incident, how rare it is in pro sports. And yeah, there's only been a handful of fatalities across thousands and thousands and thousands of games in hockey and football and baseball, and they all have, you know, potential for fatality, but it's just so foreign. Motorsports, I suppose you could fold it. Juxtapose it to racing, where every single shift, every single inning, every single snap, to put it in football, baseball, and hockey terms, every single trip in competition has the potential to kill every single jockey and every single horse that are engaging in the action. Not the once every 50 years, not Tony Conigliaro, not, you know, isolated, those of you that are hockey fans, Mark Howe was almost disemboweled, for God's sake, on a hockey net. Every single trip, every single day, at every single racetrack. Back after this, Rich McBeary joins us. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule, an average...
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses.